From News Talk 580 1059 KMJ, this is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. Now, here's your host, Mark Kepler.
As the baby boom generation begins to reach retirement age, California's senior population will begin to see significant growth. By 2030, the over 65 population will grow by 4 million people, and it will become a more racially and ethnically diverse population, with many living alone. And that has significant implications for the types of senior support services that will be needed in the future. Recently, the Nonpartisan Public Policy Institute of California issued a report, Planning for California's Growing Senior Population, that discussed those implications, including the need for more nursing care and assisted living facilities, as well as the need for more health care professionals, especially those who provide home and community-based services for seniors. We'll hear from one of the lead authors of the report, Laurel Beck, policy analyst with the Public Policy Institute of California. The Senior Boom, Preparing for the Baby Boom Aftershock.
Additional funding for the Matty Report made possible by a grant from the wonderful company, harvesting health and happiness around the world, and by Kaiser Permanente, Thrive. From the California Channel at the State Capitol and the Matty Institute, it's the Matty Report with Executive Director of the Matty Institute, Mark Kepler.
The Nonpartisan Public Policy Institute of California recently issued a report entitled Planning for California's Growing Senior Population. Our guest, Laurel Beck, is one of the authors of that report. Laurel is an expert in health policy and the policy challenges relating to aging populations, and just happens to be an alum of my alma mater, the University of Wisconsin. So welcome.
Thank you.
How much has California's senior population, how much is it going to grow in the next 10 or 15 years?
So our report is based on Department of Finance projections, and we show an increase of 87% by the year 2030. And we focus on that year because that's when the last segment of the baby boomers will reach retirement age. And to put that in perspective, in 2012, there were 4.6 million Californians that were over age 65. And by that number, it will be, or by that year, excuse me, it will be 8.6 million.
Yeah, it's 87%, or in other words, it almost doubles.
It almost doubles, yeah. 4 million more seniors.
Wow. All kinds of opportunities and situations to think about.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take a little closer look at the elderly and how the senior population is changing in California. How is it changing ethnically?
The change in the racial ethnic composition is going to be significant. The numbers of seniors in each racial ethnic group is going to grow, but some race ethnic groups are going to grow faster than others. In particular, we're going to see the fastest rates of growth among the Latino and the Asian Pacific Islander populations. So one example is that in 2012, an estimated 18% of seniors in California were Latino. And in 2030, that share is projected to grow up to 26%.
Quite a substantial increase. So what about males and females? They say that females live longer than males. Are we going to see a large female population?
Actually, we think that it's going to go in the other direction.
Really?
We're expecting to see a slight uptick in the number of males as a proportion of the population, and that's kind of because of some gains we've made in life expectancy on certain health conditions. There's a lot of reasons for it. But based on our Department of Finance numbers, we think that the share of males in the population is going to go from about 44% in 2012 to about 45.5%. And that sounds small, but it's actually pretty significant in terms of in these kind of demographic projections.
Yeah, it's kind of surprising, actually. So let's talk about family structures. This idea of single and divorced versus married, or on the other hand, having children versus not having children. How many California's seniors are going to change in that regard? How is it going to change?
It's going to change a lot, we think, actually. Based on survey data, we looked at previous trends, and when you think about it, in the 1970s and 1980s, we saw shifts away from sort of traditional mom, dad, and two kids family structure. People were less likely to get married starting around that time. They were less likely to have kids. And those people are now reaching senior age. So we're anticipating seeing seniors that are more likely to have never been married, they're more likely to be divorced, and they're more likely not to have children.
But if they're never been married, they could be with someone and just not married.
That's true, and that's absolutely true. That we could we may not be picking up on specifics, like if you're cohabiting versus being
Which happened a lot in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, absolutely. So we may be overstating that. But in terms of the number of people in surveys who report that they've never been married, there's going to be a pretty significant uptick. And we think that the number of people who have never had any children is actually going to go up significantly. So one statistic we cite in the paper is that in 2012, 12% of 75-year-old women had no children. And by 2030, we project that that number is going to be 20%. So one in five women are going to not have children, which is a pretty significant part of the population.
That's a big jump. Mm-hmm. Again, almost another one of these doubling of the percentages. So the composition of this of seniors in California in 2030, very different than historically has been the case.
Absolutely. We think that along a number of dimensions, our report focuses on the demographics, but in a lot of ways, seniors in 2030, seniors looking forward, are going to look pretty different than they have in the past.
Now, I want to ask a little bit. I really wasn't addressed in your report, but it's still a very important issue, I think, though, for seniors, and that is fewer workers getting traditional pension plans, more and more getting this 401k option. And the problem is that even those that get the 401k option, a lot of times they don't really use it. And they're putting away too little money. What are your thoughts on the economic situation of California seniors going forward?
So I think one important point is that income and wealth are harder to predict than demographics. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that depends on how the overall economy does, how the housing market does, how financial markets do. Mm-hmm. So I'm a little less able to make kind of hard predictions about that. I do think that your point is absolutely taken. People with defined benefit pensions had more predictable income streams.
Which is the traditional pension.
Yes. Versus a shift to 401ks. And you do see lower take-up of 401ks than you saw of defined benefit type plans. So I think that there is reason to worry. There always has been, but maybe more going forward, that people are not saving enough, that they are not going to have enough resources to support them in the way that they are hoping to continue living as they age.
Okay. Well, thank you for that description of the key demographic trends in California's emerging senior population. So what are the implications of those trends? That conversation in a moment. This is the Maddie Report. Our guest is Laurel Beck, a co-author of a PPIC report entitled Planning for California's Growing Senior Population. So you stated in your report that California's senior population is going to grow substantially in the next 10 to 15 years. But what are the implications of that?
I think that the growing senior population has implications for a lot of policy areas. Basically, any policy that affects people is going to be affected by a growing senior population. In this particular report, we focus on what that growth means for the demand for support in daily activities and what the state will need to do to anticipate the need for facilities and health workers.
Yeah.
But it really just think of a policy area and more seniors.
Yeah, and you're thinking, I'm going to talk more about this later, but I'm sure in terms of living in place and all the health workers that are going to be required to make that happen, because as you get older, you're going to need some assistance, particularly if you're not married and or don't have children.
Absolutely.
So what about the ethnic makeup of California seniors? You said that was going to change rather dramatically.
Yes.
What are the implications of that?
We find that according to the data, people from different racial ethnic groups tend to demand different services. And that we want to be a little careful saying that because they may have differential access to services as
Could you give me an example of that?
Just you may see that, for instance, African Americans use nursing homes at a higher rate than other subpopulations tend to, whereas Latinos tend to use nursing homes at a lower rate.
And any explanation as to why that is?
There's a lot of things that may be there's a lot of different theories. One of them is that maybe African Americans, for whatever reason, have less access to home and community-based services. You can also, some people point to cultural differences, which is a very
Latinos have extended families, perhaps.
Yes, and maybe more of a desire to try and remain in home as opposed to going into nursing homes. So it could be preferences among consumers. It could traditions among families. It could be information differences across urban versus rural communities. So that,
right.
I think it's a pretty complicated issue, but we do see in the data different rates of staying at home versus using nursing homes across different racial and ethnic groups.
Yeah.
You also see different marital rates across racial and ethnic groups.
Sure. So. Well, let's talk about the male-female makeup of California seniors. I mean, you indicated in an earlier segment that actually the male the portion of seniors that are male is actually going to go up a little bit. Any implications of that?
I think that there may be some. I don't think it's going to be nearly as much of a driver of changes as we would think from the racial and ethnic differences. In our data, we do find that men are slightly more likely to require some assistance with daily activities than women are.
You're saying
are.
Men are needy?
But I think compared to the racial ethnic trends, this is a relatively small difference.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the consequences of this changing family structures. I think that's going to be probably a pretty big issue. As the senior population have different family structures than they have traditionally in the past, what are the implications?
I agree with you that this is a really big issue. As we age, we are more likely to need help with daily activities, and this can be health care, but it can also be personal care or errands, going to the store. It can be chores like cooking and cleaning. And we know that family members are major providers of those types of services.
Right.
So as we project that there are going to be more seniors that are unmarried or have never had children, then they're, one, less likely to have family to provide that type of support. But we also in our data find that for a lot of reasons, people who say I've never been married are also a little more likely to require some support. So we think this is a population that the state needs to be particularly sort of aware of and focusing on, because they're more likely to need external support and it's more likely that they're going to come in contact with state programs.
Yeah. What about the potentially worsening economic situation for California's growing senior population? And we were talking earlier about the traditional pension plan that people could rely on. Those have gone the way of the dodo bird. I mean, very rare, except maybe in the public sector. Now more of this 401k situation. What are the consequences?
The biggest consequence that we highlight in this particular report is that the role of state programs is going to become increasingly important. Disabled and low-income seniors will qualify for Medi-Cal and other programs like in-home supportive services. But we're going to see a lot more seniors, and if an increasing number of them are qualifying as low-income, then a lot more people will be qualifying for these programs. And this is part of the reason that we emphasize that policymakers need to be following trends now and paying attention now, even though the bulk of the growth in the over 65 population is yet to come, because the more we plan and understand, the more efficiently we can use our resources.
You almost see that tidal wave kind of coming toward us and all the implications of that.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you very much for talking about those implications of this growing senior population. Up next, what are the implications of the aging population on caring for mom and dad? That conversation in a moment. This is the Maddie Report. California's growing senior population is going to be more ethnically and racially diverse than past generations and more likely to live alone. What kinds of support services are going to be needed? We're talking to Laurel Beck with the Nonpartisan Public Policy Institute of California, who recently co-authored a report entitled Planning for California's Growing Senior Population. So the number of seniors facing difficulty caring for themselves, how much is that going to increase?
In our report, we look specifically at that question, and we project an 89% increase in the number of people who report needing some kind of support, and that's going up to just over 1 million people in the state.
And you think about that, 89%, our population isn't going to increase 89%,
no.
You know, in the next 15 years, yet this need is going to increase, so it's dramatically more than an increase in the population, so it puts it in context. What about estimating the number of people who are going to have difficulty caring for themselves? How did you come up with those estimates?
So what we did is we started, the Department of Finance puts together wonderful projections.
And this is the State Department of Finance.
The California Department of Finance.
Okay.
And they put together wonderful projections on the age, racial, ethnic, and gender makeup of the population looking forward into the future. So we combine those populations with survey data, and we look at the effect of age and gender, but also your educational attainment, your marital status, whether or not you were born in the United States, and use those different factors to sort of predict the likelihood that you're going to require some care. Mm-hmm. So that 1 million people requiring care takes into account trends in racial, ethnic makeup of the population, and as well as the like household composition of the population. So we try really hard to take into account how different the seniors are going to look in the future.
It's a guess, but it's an educated guess.
It's a very educated guess.
Yeah. I don't want to say a guess, because I know you look at a lot of variables and you make sure it's statistically relevant and all that, but you're projecting.
We are, yeah, absolutely. There are things that could change things significantly.
Okay, so I'm assuming that many, if not most, seniors are going to have, even those having some difficulty living on their own, still want to stay in their homes. Is that true?
I think it is true. I think that the question is what home means. I think that a more consistent statement is people want to have as much autonomy as they can and as many choices as they can, conditional on their health needs.
For
as long as they can, right. Exactly. But I think that one thing you worry a lot about with the senior population is isolation, is getting removed from the community. Right. And a lot of people want to be engaged. They want to be either living with other seniors or living in a more in an environment where they're within walking distance of libraries or stores or other parts of the community.
You know, one of the things I found that's interesting when you talk to some seniors is sometimes, you know, they understand that. And senior living is pretty independent. But you hear this a lot. Oh, I don't want to be around old people. But, you know, you're older. And I think the mix, sometimes I think we kind of make the mistake of segregating old people, you know, into just with other old people. Mm-hmm. And really, maybe a mix with younger and old would be maybe a more vibrant community for some of these folks.
Absolutely.
And the kind of services we're talking about here are going to be, you know, if they're in home healthcare services, that's going to be required if they're living at home. Correct.
I think when in this particular report, we look at a survey question that says, do you require some support with some activity of daily living, which is a pretty low bar, and we don't really get into more serious levels of needs. It's just sort of a yes or no. And so in that respect, that 1 million number is picking up a pretty broad range of needs. It can be people with very high-level health needs, and it can be people who need help with more basic things like personal care, bathing, and dressing.
Well, let's talk about that, because there is a range of needs and services that go to those needs. One is assisted living. What kind of services do assisted living places provide?
Assisted living, you can think of it broadly as sort of a stepping stone between totally independent living in your home and the high-level health supports provided in nursing home care. So most assisted living facilities provide help with things like preparing meals, housekeeping, managing your medications. It's a community where you just don't have to do all of the things that come with home ownership or independent living.
Meals are provided,
exactly.
That kind of thing.
But they don't provide, as a rule, the kind of really high-level health care, 24-hour service that most nursing homes provide. There are some facilities that kind of cater to that spectrum and that provide both assisted living and nursing homes. But in general, when you think of assisted living, it's sort of a middle ground.
Okay, so you've kind of answered the next question I was going to have. What do nursing homes do? So there's a difference between assisted living and nursing homes.
Absolutely.
But let's talk about the numbers for nursing home, the end of the continuum in terms of the need a lot of assistance. Are those numbers going up, down? Staying the same, what?
So, in general, since the 1990s, we've actually seen a steady decline in the rate of people using nursing homes and the number of people in nursing homes. A decline.
Does that correspond with more people wanting to stay in a home?
It's people wanting to stay in home. It's the increasing availability of things like home health aides or people coming to help you with enabling you to stay in your home.
When you're talking like that, it makes me think of, you know, grocery stores that will bring now the groceries to your home.
Absolutely.
And that didn't exist 10, 15
Absolutely,
years ago.
Absolutely, exactly. And another thing is I think that the the medical community also appreciates that outcomes can be better at home, so that there's a little more collaboration between medical providers and patients in trying to make that a reality.
We've only got about 30 seconds left in the segment. I want to ask you about the costs of nursing care versus in-home or assisted living. What are the cost differences?
It ranges tremendously. It depends a lot on what your needs are, where you live, what type of... I'll emphasize again what your needs are. Do you need health supports or basically personal care supports? We cite one statistic in the paper, which is based off of the AARP's website that estimates costs. And they have an estimate. If you live in LA County, that it would cost a little over $70,000 for a semi-private room in a nursing home,
okay.
And more like $42,000 for a home health worker to come 40 hours a week. But there's a lot of ifs.
Right. But it's much less expensive to be in assisted living versus nursing.
Yes.
A nursing home.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's obviously a growing need for senior services. Up next, what should California policymakers be doing in anticipation of this senior boom? That conversation in a moment. This is the Maddie Report. Our guest is Laurel Beck with the Nonpartisan Public Policy Institute of California, who co-authored a report on California's growing senior population. So the question here is, what should the state government do in anticipation of this future wave of seniors? So should California policymakers anticipate a demand for increased spending on programs like Medi-Cal or in-home supportive services?
Absolutely. Most seniors have the majority of their health care provided through Medicare, the federal program, but low-income and disabled seniors qualify for Medi-Cal, which both provides health services and pays for nursing home care and has other programs associated with it, like in-home supportive services, IHSS, which pays for people to bring support workers into their home to provide with personal care. They don't provide health services, but they do help people stay in their home.
And sometimes those could be family members.
Yes.
As well. And there's also discussion, a little bit off the track here, there's been a discussion in the legislature about whether those in-home supportive services employees should be allowed to unionize. And so that becomes a whole nother issue, because chances are if they unionize, they're going to have better pay and benefits. That will lead to a cost somewhere that someone's going to have to pay. So there's a lot of things going on here that have policy implications. You know, you state in your report that it's helpful to think of two broad categories: where seniors live and what type of workers they're going to need for help. So let's start with where seniors live. You anticipate that most seniors are going to prefer to remain in their homes. We've talked about that. So how or who should pay for those services? If they want to stay in their home, they need in-home supportive services, who's going to pay for that?
For the most part, people are going to be responsible for paying for them on their own. If you aren't low income and don't qualify for Medi-Cal or some other government programs, this is something that you need to anticipate in case anything happens and you require some support. For people who do have low enough income to qualify for Medi-Cal, they can qualify for IHSS, and there are some other programs which will allow the state to subsidize bringing workers into your home. But I think another thing to keep in mind is that the vast majority of these services are provided in an unpaid way by family members. It's children supporting their parents and spouses supporting each other. It's a really big burden on family members of people who require some support. And so it's not a direct financial issue, but is more about time and resources.
Right, yeah. The caregiver is also a person that's in the equation. But I think people, when they're doing their financial budgets for retirement, they need to probably be thinking about they may need some support as they get older, and maybe not thinking about that. So what about assisted living? Who pays for that?
For the most part, that's another thing where people are on their own. There are some very limited cases where where Medi-Cal will cover assisted living. There's a program called the Assisted Living Waiver, which subsidizes assisted living care for a pretty specific subset of Medi-Cal beneficiaries in a certain subset of counties.
But for like 15 counties, like I read in your report, a very small group.
Very small group. And so for the most part, Medi-Cal will cover you if you need nursing home care, if your needs are intense enough that you require that level of assistance. But for assisted living, it's
And just to put it in context, and if I'm wrong, I'm sure someone will correct me, but I think it's 58 counties in California,
yes.
So 15 out of 58 counties, a small subgroup. What about nursing home care? Who pays for that?
It depends a little on what your needs are. If you need long-term nursing home care sort of indefinitely, and you're low income and you meet a number of other financial requirements, then Medi-Cal will cover it. If you're in a nursing home to recover from a medical event or a surgery, then Medicare will usually cover that if you are a Medicare beneficiary.
So Medi-Cal is a big player in the nursing home situation.
Yes.
Can you briefly describe how Medi-Cal is funded? And also, when you talk about Medi-Cal, a lot of times you hear people talk about managed care. Can you kind of talk about those two issues for a moment?
So first, Medi-Cal is funded jointly between the federal government and the state government. In California, as a rule, it's a 50-50 split on Medi-Cal expenses between the state and the feds. Managed care is an effort that's going on across a lot of states, including California, to try and make care for people who have intense health needs more efficient, to coordinate across different providers. If it's your nursing home director, your in-home workers, your doctors,
what they do, I think, in Medicare, if I understand you, correct me if I'm wrong, is with managed care, what they do is they say, you know, pay this amount per month and we'll take care of all the services, as opposed to a fee for service plus we're going to pay for each one. So the assumption is in the former, under managed care, that the company, who's ever providing it, has an incentive to keep you healthy, so they don't have to provide the care, and so it's more preventative as opposed to, you know, after the fact with, you know, fee for service.
Yes, and to
I hope I made that clear.
I mean, it's a complicated thing. It's also to help reduce duplication of services across different providers and to make sure that everybody involved in a certain patient's health is on the same page about what they're receiving, what they need, and trying to save money in doing it.
Let me ask you this: workforce development. I mean, obviously, you talk about healthcare workers. That's going to be the demand's going to be changing. Who we need there, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. So when we talk about an increasing number of seniors and an increasing number of people needing support, that's the demand for services. So we're going to need a commensurate increase in the supply of services as well. We're going to need people with pretty specific skill sets. A lot of them are going to be allied health workers who are, when you think of health workers, you think of doctors and nurses.
That's not what you're talking about here.
Here we're talking about home health workers, nursing aides, medical assistants, people who can be trained at a community college. Right. And so it's going to be important that the state think about the capacity of community colleges to train them.
Up next, a closer look at the types of senior support services that will be needed in the future. What can be done to allow the elderly to live at home as long as possible? And when that no longer becomes an option, how can we make sure families can find and afford nursing and assisted care facilities for their loved ones?
You're listening to the Mattie Report, Valley Views Edition on KMJ.
Welcome. Recently, the Nonpartisan Public Policy Institute of California released a series of reports relating to elder care in California. Our guest is Laurel Beck, one of the authors of those reports and an expert on aging issues. Welcome.
Thank you.
So there are lots of ways to provide elder care. You've got nursing home care. You've got assisted living. One of the most popular, though, is in-home support services. Can you talk a little bit about in-home support services?
Yes. In-home supportive services is actually kind of a program that's related to a larger field of services called home and community-based services. But IHSS itself is a service that's provided through Medi-Cal, and that's California's Medicaid program. And what IHSS does is it provides funds for disabled people to pay for services to be provided in their own home. So you get to hire a provider to come and provide personal support services, and that can include, you know, bathing and personal care. It can help laundry, cooking, help with errands, and other things that enable you to stay in your home.
I think a lot of older people probably want to stay in
their
house.
Yes, exactly.
Right? It's comfortable. It's familiar. You know, so when we're talking about paying for this, do seniors pay for that themselves, or are they getting... is this being paid for exclusively through Medi-Cal?
So the IHSS program itself is exclusively through Medi-Cal. So that's in that situation, if you qualify based on income, and for the state of California to be eligible for Medi-Cal, you have to fall below 138% of the federal poverty line, which for two adults...
So a little bit more than the poverty line.
So it ends up being about $22,000 for two adults. And if you fall under that level of income, then you can qualify for IHSS if you're disabled. And the state will give you money to hire a worker. But if you fall above that line, there are private market
groups. It still might be cost effective. We can talk about that in a little bit. But about a half a million people, I think the number was 467,000 are in this program. It's a pretty substantial amount.
And growing.
So one thing I was a little surprised to learn, I think our audience might be surprised to learn, is that these in-home providers can be relatives.
Yes.
So is that a common practice? And can anyone just sign up a relative to do this and get paid?
Common is relative. California is one of several states that does allow that. And it ends up being a really important income support for families with disabled members. Often when somebody suffers from a disability, their spouse or their children end up having to leave the labor force or cut back on their hours at work, which is a really significant hit to income. So in addition to dealing with a family suffering from health problems, they're also dealing from the loss of income. And so because California allows you to kind of hire a family member to provide services, it provides
income
support.
And we're talking about lower income people.
Yes, by definition for IHSS. So
so you want them to have some kind of income coming in, and they can at least take care of their relative at the same time. And I assume they've got to go through the whole process of an application.
So anybody, you don't have to be a family member, kind of anybody can apply. And counties have a lot of control in the background checks they run and the different kinds of training that they do.
So there, what I was reading is that the California IHSS program mm-hmm. is moving toward managed care, mm-hmm. which I believe that's different than fee-for-service, right?
It is, yes.
So what exactly is it? Why are they moving? What are the implications?
So the idea behind managed care is that the people who are benefiting from IHSS, a lot of senior Medicaid beneficiaries touch a lot of different providers. They have multiple conditions. They may require a lot of help. And coordinating across those providers right. can lead to more efficiency. It can reduce duplication of services. The potential downsides are, one, that these programs end up losing some autonomy in how they run the programs. IHSS, instead of having independence in how they select providers or how hours are distributed, has to coordinate with other services. Right. It's also the transition to managed care has been bumpy because this is such a vulnerable population. These are, by definition, kind of low-income disabled people. And so throwing kind of curveballs and changing the types of care they're getting, who their providers are.
They got physical issues, mental issues, and all those kinds mm-hmm. of things. So who's responsible for administering IHSS? You got the federal government, you got the state government, you got county government. Who does what?
So it's a Medi-Cal program, which means it's largely funded by it's split between the state of California and the federal government.
Okay.
But control is almost entirely at the county level. So counties determine wages, counties determine training and background checks. So most of the decisions are made at the county level.
So, but I would think he who has the gold makes the rules, though. So if you're getting money from the feds and the states, even though it's administered by the county, they're still following rules.
There is state oversight, certainly, but a lot of the work that ends up happening is in recruiting and training and matching providers to patients who don't have family members that they're hiring, and all of that is handled at the county level.
And I assume they get some kind of financial support by the state and the federal government to administer mm-hmm. those programs.
Mm-hmm.
So how stable is federal and state funding for these programs? I mean, you're seeing a Republican Congress now coming in, a Republican president. There are going to be cuts in funding. If there's cuts in funding, what does that mean for the state budget?
There's a lot of big questions on that. I think we really don't know. In Congress, they're talking about repealing Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, and that the federal government provides 50% of funding for Medi-Cal, including the IHSS program. And so if there were significant cuts at the federal level, then that could have significant cuts in either the level of benefits received or people who are eligible for the program.
And just recently, the California state budget increased the number of hours. It was a 7% cut in service hours. They put that back mm-hmm. into the budget. Now, who knows what's going to happen if they lose federal funding?
Who knows exactly?
Up next, we're going to talk about what if mom or dad needs more care? What about nursing homes? Are they a viable option? That conversation in a moment. This is the Maddie Report. Welcome back. We're talking with Laurel Beck, an expert on aging issues with the Nonpartisan Public Policy Institute of California. Nursing homes, another option. They provide room and board. They provide on-site nursing care. They provide supervision and personal assistance to people who really are unable to care for themselves at that point in their lives. So, nursing homes, do they have to be licensed?
Yes, is the short answer. Usually when we talk about nursing homes, we kind of mean skilled nursing facilities, which okay. is the technical term. And in order to be to become a skilled nursing facility and qualify for the funding that comes along with that, you have to be licensed.
Actually, you make a really good point, which I probably should want to highlight, these are different terms here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Assisted living, nursing care, very different terms.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone who has parents that are aging knows the difference between these terms. But just to be clear for our audience. So we have an agency, I assume that's a state agency that...
The CDPH, the California Department of Public Health, is in charge of certifying people, or certifying institutions as skilled nursing facilities.
Okay, so how many of those exist? How many nursing home skilled facilities exist in California?
In 2014, which is the most recent data that we use in our report, it's 1,220 across the state.
Okay, and you're serving about 100,000 patients,
mm-hmm.
I understand. That's,
mm-hmm.
that's a good number. So we got an elderly parent who needs nursing home care. How much does it typically cost?
The cost varies tremendously. I'm hesitant to cite a specific number because it can depend on how intense the care they need is. It can depend on where they are in the state. It can depend on whether or not they share a room.
Okay, give us an ish.
An ish. It can be, it is pretty much always the most expensive option aside from having 24-hour care in your own home, and it can be easily $100,000.
Okay, and so we have, are those patients covered by Medi-Cal or Medicare?
So,
or is that cost taken up by Medi-Cal or Medicare?
So if you are low income, you can qualify for Medi-Cal, and Medi-Cal will pay for it. But if you have Medi-Cal, then you are more likely to have a shared room. Medi-Cal is not going to pay for your posh private room in a really
exclusive facility. Right, and there's a difference between semi-private and private rooms.
Yes.
More expensive for private.
And Medicare will pay for patients who have just come out of a hospital stay and just need rehabilitative.
So you fall down, you break your ankle, you know, you need some time to rehabilitate, so you go to a skilled nursing facility to get better, then you go back to assisted living, maybe your senior
living. Or back to your own home, even.
Right.
Yes.
And I think I was reading in your report, there's something like, you said about 3/4 of the people in skilled nursing facilities are either getting Medi-Cal or Medicare payments to take care of that. So state demographics are changing. I assume that means that demographics in nursing homes are changing as well.
That is true.
To what extent? What does it look like?
It's going to become very rapid over the next 2 decades. We saw large inflows of immigration in the 70s and 80s from Mexico, from Latin America, from Asia. And those people who immigrated in their 20s and 30s are now reaching retirement age. And so
they're a baby boom generation.
They're also boomers, exactly.
Right.
And so so the California, in particular's baby boomer generation, has already started to hit retirement age. That's going to continue through 2030. And we are going to see really, really significant growth in the number of, or in the fraction of seniors that are especially of Latino or Asian background.
Yes, yeah, so, and the white proportion of the population is going to go down a little bit.
The proportion.
The numbers are all going up,
exactly.
But the percentage is going down.
Exactly, yes.
Okay. So just a more demographically mixed senior population. Mm-hmm. So a senior ends up in a nursing home. Does that stay typically a short stay or a long stay?
It really varies a lot. I think that there's this conception that people only go to nursing homes when they can't live independently and it's a permanent stay. And we did about 59% of nursing home patients are covered by Medi-Cal. That's by definition for long-term stays. So most nursing home patients are there for a long time. But if you look at it on a stay-by-stay basis, it's actually most stays are for under 3 months.
So it's those people that, like I said, broke an ankle and they're getting rehabilitation. They can't really do it on their own. Then they go back to senior living. It's not a situation where someone goes into a nursing home necessarily and stays there for 3 or 4 years.
Yes, exactly. So in 2014, for instance, 34% of stays were for fewer than 2 weeks.
Okay.
So
that's where it primarily is. You did note in your report that California has a larger share of highly rated, good news, nursing homes than the nation as a whole. But the quality of care varies from region to region. What were your findings?
So according to data from OSHPID, which is a California agency, California does pretty well overall compared to the rest of the country. That masks regional variation. And so according to their data, the lowest fraction of highly rated homes are in the most northern part of the state and in Los Angeles and Orange County and the Inland Empire. But again, that masks variation. There are a lot of good homes in those places, but a relatively high fraction.
You know, what's interesting for our audience is they don't probably understand that they can actually find information on the quality of care. And so they look at things like the number of health inspections, nursing staff hours, and other quality measures. So if you have an aging parent, you can actually find out about these different nursing homes and where you want to put your loved one based on how good they are.
There are lots of websites. It's worth Googling. AARP certainly works hard to try and make that information as accessible as possible to people who are looking for their options.
Yeah, and it's not an inexpensive option anyway, so it's something you probably spend some time researching. Now, you've suggested that nursing homes could do a better job by coordinating with other long-term support services. How so?
I think the biggest thing that is a challenge for people involved at all parts of this process is finding the right level of care for people. There's such a spectrum of just needing a little bit of help in your own home to needing 24-hour care. Yeah. People want independence. People want freedom. And so having this trade-off of not wanting to spend too much money or too much effort on people who don't require those inputs and giving people independence, and I think that's just making sure that the care is available for people who need it, but that other options further down the spectrum of needs are also available is just a really difficult challenge that that we need to keep doing better.
Yeah, well we're going to talk next about nursing homes for mom and dad. Will you be able to find one if you need one? That kind of depends. We'll have that conversation in a moment. This is the Maddie Report.
Welcome back. We're talking with Laurel Beck with the Nonpartisan Public Policy Institute of California about the availability of nursing home care in California. You know, with people living longer, is it fair to assume that the demand for skilled nursing is going to continue to increase?
Yes, it has been going down, actually, since about the 1990s. We saw a peak level of usage, and it's been going down. But now people are living longer, and they're just going
So it's going down. Is that because they're doing in-home support services maybe a little bit?
Home and community-based services, or IHSS, or assisted living and other kind of intermediary levels. And
Before, I'm not sure, maybe you can correct me, but did those services actually exist, you know, 20, 30 years ago?
Not much less so. There's really been a lot of growth.
Okay, so I'm sorry for interrupting.
No, it's fine.
So anyway, so the demand for skilled nursing, you know, we're going to see probably an increase?
People are living longer, and there are going to be way more seniors. I can't emphasize enough. The baby boomer generation is a really big bubble in the population over time. And so as the boomers hit retirement age, more of them, and they're living longer, we'll definitely see an increase.
One of the things you mentioned in your report that the senior population growth rates are going to vary by region.
Mm-hmm.
So how much variation are we talking about, and which regions are going to have the greatest growth in senior populations?
We were surprised by how much variation there will be in the overall senior population growth. We use data from the California Department of Finance, and their numbers project that the slowest growth will be in the Central Coast region, which is kind of from Santa Barbara up to Monterey, and up in the Northern California, which is we count as kind of everything above Sacramento. And that's slow growth at 69%, which is really actually pretty fast.
Right.
And meanwhile, they project the fastest growth in the Inland Empire region, which is San Bernardino and Riverside counties, and they have that at 105%, which is over doubling.
And the San Joaquin Valley is right up there, too.
Exactly.
It's interesting. Those are also the areas that also have the highest just general population growth rates as well, so mm-hmm. I guess it's not entirely surprising. Now, you found that it's not just where the population's aging, but the demographics of California seniors that are changing. And so what's the biggest demographic changes that you're seeing?
There's a few. One, just more people. Two, they're living longer. But we also, and the difference in the race and ethnic composition.
That makes you know that living longer, that makes those of us getting older to feel a little better, right?
Even those of us who are.
Right.
The other thing that is really pronounced is that people are more likely to have never been married. They're less likely to have children than they were, kind of, again, in the 70s and 80s. We saw differences in how people married or didn't, how they formed households. And so as those people have aged, they're less likely to have family members who are willing and able to provide support for them. They're also more likely to live far away from any
support. Kind of the nuclear family, or a nuclear individual, I suppose. There's nobody there to provide the support services,
mm-hmm.
so then...
Or less likely.
There's a distance there, too. That's mm-hmm. the other issue.
And our work does suggest that people in that situation are more likely to rely on either privately funded or publicly funded services to provide them support when they need it.
Yeah, so how will changing location demographics, I'm just thinking of for seniors, impact the demand for nursing care?
So there are a lot of things which determine whether a person uses a nursing home, which is like how much care they need, whether they have alternatives such as assisted living, how much they can afford, if Medi-Cal will pay for the nursing home but won't cover assisted living, then that
You think you may need the service, but what if you can't afford? Yeah, that's a big deal. And if we're talking also about changes from federal funding possibly coming forward, those are families, I suppose, that have to pick up that cost. I mean, Mom and Dad are moving back home.
It's entirely likely. Again, a lot of question marks on federal funding, but if
So you're saying financial issues, health issues,
intensity of care. People want to have care that's close to them, close to their communities, close to their families, mm-hmm. which is gets into the importance of being regionally available.
It's just concerning. I would think if you were living for a long time in an area, and now you can't afford to stay there. You have to move, maybe closer to your kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty big shock to some of these seniors.
It is, and I think that there's a good understanding that having people being connected to their community and feeling like they are connected to the community is a really important thing, and uprooting people can lead to isolation and depression and a bunch of other outcomes which are not ideal.
There's also some cultural differences going forward, and how is that playing? What role does that play in all of this?
It plays a huge difference, I think, and we may talk more about this later. I think that people do better, they have better outcomes when they have neighbors and friends and caregivers who speak their language, who cook their food, who respect their religions, who respect their lifestyles. And so being in an environment where you're comfortable, where you, again, can communicate effectively with people, where people take off the shoes if you don't want shoes in your house.
I can relate to that. I have relatives. That is a big deal.
That is a big deal. And so the cultural diversity, even as I'm talking about Latino and Asian, there's a lot of diversity within the Asian subpopulation. Being speaking Korean and my caregiver speaks Chinese, we can't communicate. And so that's a really important thing to keep in mind, is how diverse California is. And these just state level numbers of we have this many caregivers and this many people, or this many beds and this many people, mask a lot of...
Right. You may not have the right caregiver with the right language skills, cultural awareness skills to treat, to deal, to help that senior.
In the right region.
In the right region.
With the right medical skills.
So the macro numbers kind of hide some of the micro kind of issues that are bubbling beneath the surface.
Mm-hmm. Which is why this is important both at the state and the local levels.
Okay, well, up next we're going to talk about what state and local leaders can do to improve elder care in California. That conversation in a moment. This is the Maddie Report. Welcome back. The data show that we're going to have a greater demand for all health and personal services, including skilled nursing care for our seniors. Now, how can we make sure that that care is affordable and accessible to California seniors? We're talking with an expert in aging populations, Laurel Beck, from the Nonpartisan Public Policy Institute of California. So will there be enough nursing home capacity to keep up with demand?
That is a tricky question. It kind of depends at what level you talk about. Currently, most of the nursing homes in the state have some extra capacity. At all regions, there's a little bit of room to absorb some growth. And we have seen increases in the number of nursing home beds across the state over the past 10 years or so. However, our report projects that the demand for nursing home care is going to rise significantly. And we don't think that 2016 capacity is enough to meet 2030 demand.
Which, by the way, isn't that far away. 14 years will happen pretty fast.
It takes a while to build
a nursing
home.
And now there's a tsunami of baby boomers.
Silver tsunami.
that are aging, and they're living longer.
And so if nursing homes continue to increase capacity at the rate that they have at a state level, we'll be about on track. That, however, masks tremendous regional variation.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that regional variation. How are we doing regionally? Are there going to be, gaps in coverage?
We project that there are going to be gaps. I think that there are a couple of factors at play. One of them is that regions have differences in how much sort of extra capacity they have right now to absorb.
Okay.
And then there's also, as we talked about before, a lot of variation in how quickly the senior population is growing and by implication the demand for nursing homes.
So you could have a double whammy effect where you could have not very high capacity and a burgeoning
exactly.
senior population.
Exactly. So what we find is that the population, or the Central Coast, which we said is kind of from Santa Barbara to Monterey, and Northern California are the ones facing the slowest growth in their over 65 populations, and our report says that they're kind of in the best shape to absorb the growing population.
So everybody wants to move over to the Central Coast for the weather, but okay, until that point.
And then on the other hand, the Bay Area and the San Joaquin Valley, the Central Valley and the Central Sierra, look like they...
Which, I saw that in your report, I found that interesting. I understand the San Joaquin Valley because the population growth is generally pretty larger, but the Bay Area? That's surprising.
The Bay Area is going to, it is both relatively rapid growth and just already being pretty close to capacity.
The housing issue probably.
The housing issue is a big part of it.
Can you imagine trying to live, in San Francisco with those rates?
It's pretty tough.
It would be a challenge for a senior. So what can or should state and local leaders do to support our seniors with the greatest needs?
Again, an in-depth question. There's a lot to talk about.
Sure,
I think a good place to start is the states had a Senate Select Committee on Aging and Long-Term Care that released a big report last year. And they had loads and loads of recommendations about what people can do at every level. At the state level, they emphasize the importance of leadership and funding and then coordination across many agencies. If you need some help and you go on to state websites, it's a complete maze. It's incredibly disorienting about which services you qualify
for. Department of Public Health, they got this other department.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which ones, where, which, is it something that's administered by the county? Where in the county is the office? What number do I call? And that's a real hurdle for people to kind of get the services.
I would think, particularly seniors too, because they're dealing with all, dealing with, you know, multiple medications. Now they're going to deal with multiple agencies.
Mm-hmm. Or it's their spouse or child who's trying to do it on their behalf.
Right.
And has
part-time with a full-time job, probably
exactly.
Raising kids.
Mm-hmm. This is both the caregiver and the senior populations. It's making it more complicated is not helpful. They also talk about at the local level, there's a need for training and supporting a qualified, culturally competent healthcare workforce. And a lot of times when we talk about healthcare workforce, people think of doctors and nurses, but it's in-home support workers, it's nursing aides, it's medical aides, it's radiology technicians.
There's so a lot of this could be community colleges and those kinds of things, which is interesting if you're trying to address unemployment issues too. This could be, you get a twofer, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're taking care of unemployment and you're taking care of a need that society has, these caregivers.
Mm-hmm. PPIC has done other work that suggests that healthcare workforce issues are really important for the state. And that's something that can be handled both at the state, but then also at kind of local level.
Anything else you think that we should be focusing on?
I think the other thing that is worth mentioning is just also having supports for family caregivers. Again, if your spouse is disabled and needs support, if your parents are disabled and need support, it's a real burden. People suffer from exhaustion and depression.
Yeah, I mean, you're dealing with a full-time job and a full-time caregiver. That's tough on the caregiver.
Mm-hmm. And so the need for caregiver supports is also kind of, it's easy to overlook.
Yeah.
But it's a really important auxiliary kind of set of
great
things.
Overview. Thank you very much. Laurel Beck with the Nonpartisan Public Policy Institute of California. Thanks for joining us. If you want to stay current with state and local politics, you can follow the Maddie Institute on Facebook, Twitter, or log on to our website at maddieinstitute.org. This is Mark Kepler for the Maddie Report. Thanks for joining us. The views and opinions expressed on the Maddie Report are those of the individuals participating in the program and do not necessarily reflect those of the California Channel or the Maddie Institute. If you'd like to share your thoughts about the points and opinions expressed on the Maddie Report, visit our website at maddieinstitute.org.
The Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition, is a public affairs partnership between KMJ Radio, Cumulus Media, and the nonpartisan Maddie Institute, providing the Valley with valuable insight and analysis on politics and important public policy issues. This is KMJ.